Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
What you're about to hear is a program that is geared more for parents than it is for young children. In fact, if you have any kids listening with you right now, you might want to go straight to our website at homeward.com so you can review the program on your own.
A lot of women in particular, I think men too, but a lot of women mostly, are living in a world believing that they have almost these unrealistic expectations of being perfect. You know, a model has to look perfect.
So when did you know you wanted to be a model?
I guess it would have to be the first time I went through the second grade. I caught my reflection in a spoon while I was eating my cereal, and I remember thinking, wow, you're ridiculously good looking. Maybe you could do that for a career.
Do what?
Be professionally good looking.
Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.
I'm Jim Burns. Well, millions of teen and preteen girls spend countless hours combing through fashion magazines. I mean, they're looking for tips on keeping up with the latest fashion trends. But deep inside, I think many of these girls are also secretly wondering what a model's life is actually like. I've got three daughters, and I just think they may think that at times. Well, on today's edition of Homeward, you're going to meet a woman who really did live that fantasy life. Her name is Jennifer Strickland. She's a great friend of ours here at Homeward. She was only 17 years old when she signed a lucrative modeling contract with one of the top modeling agencies in the world. She was considered the face of the 90s, and she was about to spend an entire summer modeling and traveling through Europe. What a deal. However, it wasn't long before the glamorous image of the modeling world wore off for Jennifer, and she was starving herself to keep up with that perfect image of a supermodel. But she was also suffering from emotional and spiritual starvation as well. Well, if you have a daughter, you need to hear Jennifer Strickland's powerful conversation. It's coming up next, right here on Homeward. Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. A great program today. A perfect girl who found true beauty. Jennifer Strickland is with us, and I'm so glad she is with us. She's one of my favorite people. Bachelor's degree in broadcast journalism at the University of Southern California, master's in writing and literature. But what she's really known for is being a model, a runway model. She's written a great book called Girl Perfect, Confessions of a Former Runway Model, and it's quite a story. And today, put on your seatbelt. You're going to hear quite a story. It's confessions of someone who has not lived the perfect life, and yet we're calling her a perfect girl who found true perfection. The perfect, by the way, is in quotes. Jennifer, welcome to our program.
Thank you so much, Jim.
I've been looking forward to this for so long, and your book has just come out, and it's wonderful. I even read it. It's a checkbook, and it's pink, and I even read it. I'll just admit that.
Good for you.
Anyway, such a privilege to have you with us. Now, as a teenager, you signed a contract with one of the most famous modeling agencies in Los Angeles, and it kind of sounded like a dream come true. I want you to talk about that.
Well, I'd been modeling since I was about 8 years old. I was kind of an awkward girl, and I just kept growing taller and taller. And so my mom got me into the business, hoping to sort of help me gain some poise, stand up straight, and so forth. And so at 17 years old, when I signed with Nina Blanchard, it was kind of like someone getting a volleyball scholarship or something like that. It was just exciting. It was exciting.
And yet at the same time, you know, what we're going to hear today is that a lot of women in particular, I think men too, but a lot of women mostly, are living in a world believing that they have almost these unrealistic expectations of being perfect. You know, a model has to look perfect. And so at 17, all of a sudden, you were placed in this big-time runway model world where you all of a sudden felt like, you know, you had to look perfect, act perfect, at least when you're in front of the camera.
Absolutely. And there was also the feeling for me, too, that I had to get straight A's, that I had to be the perfect daughter, that I had to be the perfect student. I got an academic scholarship to USC, so I had to maintain that as well. And then in the modeling industry, there obviously, I mean, our entire value was based on our outward appearance. So you just can't have a bad skin day or a bad hair day or not look perfect that day.
You couldn't say, hey, you know, I don't really feel like looking good today. You had to.
No, that was your job.
Yeah, exactly. Now, at first, it seemed like many of the people that you were working with were treating you with value and respect. At least that's what you said. But then you experienced kind of just horrific tragedy. I mean, in the hands of someone who was supposed to be looking after you. I want you to talk about that. You were by this time in Europe, in some of the incredible, incredible places. You happened to be in Italy, and you were traveling to Venice for a job.
Yeah. I had a man in Italy who sort of took me under his wing, and he believed that I could become a top model. He wanted to promote me. There was all these things that he wanted to do to sort of catapult my career. And I had gone down to Venice for a job, and he declared that I shouldn't go alone. And so he sent his son with me, and it was there that his son took advantage of me. And, you know, I had in many ways been taken advantage of over the years, over and over and over again, in the sense of I would go on a job and everything would look innocent on the outside. We would shoot, you know, the cover of the magazine. And then afterwards, on my way out the building, then, you know, the 50-something-year-old photographer would grab me in the hallway and basically, you know, wanting to have sex with me. And here I am, like a 20-year-old girl, just totally taken aback. I don't speak the language. This, and I would have to fend myself off from him. So over the years, I was constantly having to fend myself off from photographers and clients. Not saying that every photographer and every client was immoral. That's not, wasn't the case. But there was 1 out of 10 that was. And I was sort of used to that. But I think what happened with me is that from the time I first went to Europe at 17 to the time that I was actually raped when I was 22 or 23 over in Italy, is that it was sort of a slow stripping away of my innocence, where it was kind of like they were chipping away. You know, they love you innocent, but they can't wait to steal it from you. That's kind of how I see the way the world views girls with their sexuality.
Well, it's interesting because one of the lessons that you learned early on in the modeling industry was that sex sells. I mean, in our culture, many women find this affirmation of their sexuality, you know, a big thing for them. And they don't mean to be involved in a relationship. You know, a lot of our moms and dads who are listening, I mean, their daughters are, you know, struggling with this, or their sons are struggling with it because it sells. They didn't mean to go there, but like you said, they chip away. What was the lesson you learned about sex selling, and what did you learn as a model in that?
Well, I learned that often men in the world, and I think that we do need to teach our girls this, that men in the world are attracted to innocence, and they will often make it look very innocent. For example, I would shoot with a photographer and it was innocent. It was fine. But then the next time he would have me come back to shoot, he would then offer me drugs. He would get me to try to take my clothes off. And, you know, he would invite another man to come and watch the shoot, you know, things like that. And so a lot of times, and I was very naive. I truly thought that most of these photographers, I thought that they were really just wanting to be professional with me.
They had pure motives.
I don't think that we prepare our girls enough to know how men think. If I had known better how men think, which is typically very visually and very sexually, I think I would have been a lot more careful.
Yeah. Now, all men aren't evil, but what you're saying to girls today is that is a message. Guys are very visual. And then you also said in your book, a lot of times guys will say, I love you, to have a girl give them sex, where a woman sometimes will want to hear, I love you, so they'll give sex. It's kind of the opposite.
Sure. And we have that, you know, in my case, obviously when I was modeling in Europe, my father wasn't there. And so it is very common for girls that don't have that, you know, physical father there or the affirmation from the men in their life to then go and look for it from other men. And so I ended up in, you know, and that's the way the modeling industry works. There's older men are running the agencies. Older men are running the magazines. So that puts us in a precarious situation because you put a young girl in situations where older men are giving
oftentimes
her
vulnerable.
Yeah. They're giving her all this affirmation for her beauty and so forth. And then later on, then they're going to try to manipulate. And that's what I wasn't really set up for.
And a lot of those guys were manipulating, too. I mean, they were doing that not just with you, but they were doing it with other models the next day.
Left and right.
Interesting. Now, you did runway work for Giorgio Armani, which had to be incredible. I mean, one of the best modeling agencies in the world. But when you got there, you said it was hard to be happy. I want you to talk about that.
Well, as a little girl growing up doing the runway for Broadway and Robinson's and, you know, and Macy's and things like that, of course, that would have been my ultimate dream, is to end up on Armani stage. And when I went off to Italy, I really set my sights on him, and because I was his type. He goes for the very thin, blonde, pale type, you know, Versace, he wants them curvy, but Armani, he wanted us real thin.
I'm learning a lot about modeling that I didn't know about.
Right, Roger. Right, right. By the way, Armani's not a modeling agency. He's a fashion designer.
Oh, exactly.
But yeah.
Of course, I knew that. I'm the guy who's wearing Levi's to this interview, but go ahead.
So am I. So anyway, I set my sights on Armani, and it took, you know, I walked for every designer, and he happened to be the one that opened the door for me. But we starved ourselves to get the shows. So I was extremely hungry physically and beginning my route to anorexia to get to that place. So once I finally got there, I don't know what it was. I really believe that God had another plan for me. And I think that he revealed, it was kind of like Dorothy going to Oz and meeting the wizard and realizing it was a facade. And that's exactly what happened to me when I went backstage. On the stage, it was exciting, the applause, the paparazzi, you know, that need for affirmation that girls have. It was an exciting moment for me. But when I went backstage and I started looking around at the girls, for some reason, it was like a veil kind of fell off my eyes, and I was able to see how empty and hungry they all were for approval, and how we were all just starving for that stamp of approval. And I really began to wonder, literally in line, ready to go back up for the grand finale of the shows, I began to realize that I wanted more in my life than just that.
Boy, that's fascinating. Listen, we're going to have to take a break. We'll be right back. Jennifer Strickland with us, a perfect girl who found true beauty.
And Jennifer Strickland, the author of the book Girl Perfect, which is a book that Dr. Jim Burns highly recommends. This issue of body image is so important for us as parents to kind of get our arms around, because it is affecting girls. It's also affecting boys as well. And the more we can educate ourselves about this issue, the better equipped we'll be to handle the types of questions and issues that our kids are facing too. Visit our online resource center at homeward.com. Start your subscription to Homeward's weekly culture update, and you'll learn about what's really new and hip and happening in the world of youth culture. That's at homeward.com.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. Incredible conversation today. Jennifer Strickland with us, a perfect girl who found true beauty. Her book is called Girl Perfect, Confessions of a Former Runway Model. I actually gave this book, Roger, to all of my girls. I made copies of the galley and passed this to them because I thought it was just so important, because it's just tough being out there. Now, you're saying you're in the back of this incredible experience. It's Armani. And yet you're also going, guy, it's, you know, we look happy as we walk out on that stage, but we're not all that happy there. You mentioned in your book that there's kind of a comparison game in the modeling world. What does that mean?
Well, I think there's a comparison game going on with girls.
Yeah, period.
Period.
Yeah.
And it gets heightened, of course, in the modeling industry, because we're competing with each other based upon something over which we have very little control, yeah, which is our outward appearance. And I think that girls in our world are taught to sort of measure themselves against the next girl, and that you know, a woman walks in the room, yeah, and the women all size her up. Where does she fall on the comparison scale? And, you know, we dealt with that in the modeling industry because that was our job.
Actually, as we get into your story, you know, we're talking about some drug use and experimentation. We're talking about eating disorder, definitely. But one of the other things that you talked about that was so fascinating, I circled it. You talked about emotional starvation. During this time in your life, you said you suffered from what you called emotional starvation. What did you mean by that?
Well, for one thing, I was models are shipped off to Europe. That's how the business works. And so I was away from my family, away from my country, away from my language, away from people who loved me for more than what I look like. And I became very hungry emotionally. And I think the average girl is hungry. I've got a daughter myself, and she seems very emotionally hungry for that approval and affirmation. And I suffered from, I think, okay, being valued only for what I look like put me into an emotional starvation. I needed to know that I was more, right, than the outer shell. Right. And in that business, I was only valued for my flesh, which I had very little control over. When I began to struggle with anorexia, when I began to lose my hair, when I began to struggle with cystic acne and other things, I was totally discarded by all the men in the modeling industry that at once, you know, were lavishing me with approval. I needed a love that was not going to run out.
Right. Now, in the middle of your modeling odyssey that you're going through, and we're obviously skipping through a lot of the incredible story that's in your book, but you became a Christian. And I want you to talk about what that was like.
Well, it was really at the end.
In the end, yeah.
Yeah, at the end of my modeling career, I had been struggling from this emotional starvation. I'd been struggling with anorexia. Once I became thin enough for the designers, then I went to a point of becoming too thin and then being rejected for that. And like I said, I also began to struggle with acne because my hormonal balance was completely thrown off from starving myself. I'd gone almost a year without menstruating, for example. So my body was not balanced. And at this time, I began being rejected by the designers and the agents because I wasn't fitting the perfect image. And there's always a prettier, younger girl coming to town. So they'll just move on to her. My life just spiraled. And I was using drugs to numb the pain. And I had been taken advantage of. I was lonely. And I came close to killing myself, which I talk about in the book. And it was just at this time that some total strangers in Germany actually reached out to me for Christ and brought me to church. And they basically saved my life.
Yeah. In that amazing story.
Yeah.
We don't have much time left, but I want to ask this question. I mean, you sought perfect affirmation, perfect acceptance, a perfect body, a perfect image, you know, in the modeling industry, but the industry let you down. And I want you to take the final moments of this segment to talk about the biblical formula for real beauty.
Well, certainly 1 Peter 3:3 says that real beauty doesn't come from outward adornment, but it comes from the inner self. The key to that is that 1 Peter 3:3 says that the real beauty comes from the inner self, the unfading beauty of the gentle and quiet spirit, which is so powerful in God's sight. That spirit is Christ. Psalm 50 verse 2 says that God is perfect in beauty. And yet Isaiah says that Jesus had nothing about him that was particularly attractive. In other words, in God's eyes, real beauty and perfect beauty that actually lasts is the spirit of Christ in us. And that's what girls are missing. They're thinking that it's the outward. The outward is going to fade away. And the only thing that's going to be left is his spirit in us. That is the only perfect beauty there is.
Fabulous. I know, again, we don't have much time, but I want you to also talk about, in this process, I mean, you've talked about drug use and anorexia and obviously some sexual experiences. Your parents knew some of this, or they didn't know any of it, or what's the story with that?
The biggest mistake that I made and that they made is that we did not talk about it.
Yeah.
And there was so much pressure on me to maintain the perfect image. And I think that they were sort of duped by the illusion because they, at times, were just seeing me in magazines. I mean, I would see them often. We had a good relationship. But my experiences in Europe were represented by what they saw in the magazine. So they didn't know the story behind it. And I wanted that approval so much. And I think this is the situation with so many young girls. You don't want to talk to your mom and dad about what's really going on in your life because you believe that if you're perfect enough, they'll approve of you.
Right. It's a great point. And I think you told me once that your mom actually said, you know what, I would need as a mom, one of my mistakes was to not be there and be in your face and talk about some of the things that maybe she even had hints of wondering about.
Oh, I know my mom wondered if I was being sexually active. I know that she wondered that I was using drugs. She worried endlessly about me being in Europe alone. And yet the one thing that she was afraid to do was to really get in my face and say, Jen, I don't care if you're a model. I don't care if you keep your scholarships. I don't care about any of it. I want you to be happy. And I want to know what's really going on in your life. And I'm going to love you unconditionally, no matter what you tell me. And so that that's the one thing that my mom and I want to get out there, is that the moms and dads have to ask the hard questions, and the girls have to know that you don't have to be perfect to get your parents' approval, that you can be human and be loved like that. And that is really the desire of every girl in the world, is to be imperfect and be loved anyway.
Very important. Girl Perfect is the book, Confessions of a Former Runway Model, Jennifer Strickland. Thanks for being with us. You've got to come back. We've got to keep talking about this.
I would love it. Thanks.
And that concludes part one of Dr. Jim Burns' two-part conversation with author and former model Jennifer Strickland here on the Homeward Broadcast. We've been talking about a perfect girl who found true beauty, and we'll hear part two on the next edition of Homeward. And Jim, something you were talking about at the end of your conversation with Jennifer, I want you to take the final moments of our time together and drill down on this just a little bit. The parents' involvement, especially with kids who are older, middle school or high school years, how much should we be involved in? Sometimes we want to get more involved, but give us some encouragement as to how much is too much.
Well, I think a lot of times, Roger, we move away from our kids, just like they're moving away from us. They kind of don't want to be with us all the time. So and we say, well, fine, you don't need to have my input, when that is not the fact. Kids who are in pre-adolescence, and especially in adolescence, they do want their moms and dads' input. It just can't be in a dorky way, if you would. So we've got to figure it out in a different way. And I think it's very important. Not easy for kids, not easy for parents. I think it's a time when a lot of kids who are moving into adolescence don't do the transition well. And it's not an easy transition. You know, in yesteryear, and we've talked about this on the program before, you know, you had adolescents for just a few years, and then they went and got married.
Right.
Well, now it's just so complicated. They don't have the job description. Interesting enough, kids don't know what to do, but parents don't either.
Right.
So I think it's so important during this season of adolescence that we do a number of things. And this story about Jennifer reminds me how important it is for us. First of all, I think we have to be prayerful. I mean, truly, make prayer the first attack rather than kind of the last defense. So pray for kids. Pray God's protection upon the kids. In fact, let the kids know that you're praying for them. Is there anything I can pray for you? I mean, there were times when I said that with my girls, and they looked at me more in defense and went like, you know, is he going to say something negative? No, I'm just praying for you. Not too long ago, I said to my girls, I haven't done it right, but I'll tell you one thing. I think I've prayed for you every day. I stopped them in their tracks, and I think that's an important thing. Also, be intentional, word we use here all the time. You got to be on the lookout for teachable moments, and that's basically how we parent our kids, is look for those teachable moments. And if you aren't familiar with the kinds of influences that your kids have, and again, maybe Jennifer's parents weren't as familiar because she's, you know, in another country doing other things.
Right.
Well, you know what? Be intentional. Learn about it. You know, we always say, be student of the culture. Listen to what they listen to. Read what they read. Watch what they watch. And so I'll sometimes sit down next to my kids and kind of watch whatever they're watching. And I'm going, yuck, gross. But I don't make the comment until afterwards, where we kind of talk through the process and then decide, is this going to be something that's going to stay in the Burns home or not in the Burns home? But we've got to be intentional about that. And then also be relational. You know, it's a generation of kids who really wants community, and they want relationship badly. They want it sometimes on their terms. I always say that teenagers, and we're not just talking about teenagers here, but that teenagers are kind of like cats. You know, they want relationship when they want relationship.
Right, right.
But what I found is my girls will go out for a yogurt or an ice cream, or funny because they're skinny, but the food seems
true.
To do it for them.
Yeah.
I've asked them, you know, let's go shopping. You know, I've got $10. Here you go. Let's go find something fun for $10 or whatever. And in doing that, it's just the relationship. Now, I've got a list of things I want to talk to them about. At the same time, sometimes I just need to go into relationships. It's what so many parenting experts say, rules without relationship equal rebellion.
That's great wisdom, Jim. And at the same time, we realize that rules with relationship lead to responsibility. And so that's an area where we as parents can be intentional, we can be authentic, we can be proactive with our kids. And that's why Homeward is here, quite frankly, and why we've been doing what we're doing since 1985. We are able to continue to provide the resources that you need. Many of them, in fact, most of them at homeward.com are available without cost. But that's because of your prayers and faithful financial support. If you can give a gift online to support our ministry today, we would love to hear from you. Our website is absolutely secure at homeward.com. Now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.